Now we're going to talk about the second half of mastering our habits, and that's a little bit go deeper into the concept of commitment. Okay, because to start off this course, I asked everyone that you're only able to join if you're able to make the commitment. And a lot of people get tense when you even hear that word. But it's really important to go into depth to why commitments are important from both a Torah and a psychological perspective. Okay? So let's start off with the Torah perspective. Where could we learn that the Torah values the importance of commitments? From where in Torah thought and Torah philosophy might I derive that the Torah thinks commitment is really important? Anywhere in the Bible. Tanakh, Gemara, Chassidus, I don't care. Whatever comes to your mind. Very good. So halacha is very bound to committed times.
Yeah, whether it's money during the day or calendar year.
Right, holidays or daily things you have to do. It's all of that. This is the time you have to do it.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's a great
example.
A lot of rules.
All of halacha is about commitment, and you have to do this and have to do that. Good. Yeah.
The covenant.
Very good. The covenant. The covenant of Har Sinai. In fact, it's a two-way deal. God commits to us and we commit to them. Then no, right? It's a free country, you like Judaism, great, have fun. No, it's not like that in the Torah. It's like, I'm going to do this for you because you're my committed people and you're going to be this to me. And the Torah is even pretty clear about it. It says, you know what? You don't really have a choice. You and the future generations, you're in. Your soul is born committed. Yeah, and I'm holding the mountain on top of your head, according to the Midrash. You know, like or not Midrashically, in the Pshat of the Chumash itself. Like, you got to do it. And if you do it, it's going to be great. And if you don't do it, it's going to be bad. Like, you got to be committed.
Well, how good was it for the Banfest that met you if they wanted for 40 years?
Correct. Nachon, I'm not saying it was easy. They weren't very committed. If you read this week's Torah Parsha, they weren't exactly the best and the most committed examples, yeah. And therefore, it didn't really work out so well for them. But commitment is the core to the Torah. Yeah. Okay, so I think it's obvious, and the whole system is built into commitment. And the truth is, a lot of moderns have a problem with it. I was listening to a great YouTube TED debate, very entertaining, between Rav Jonathan Sacks and one of these new atheists, Richard Dawkins, I believe it was. And Richard Dawkins is arguing that it's immoral to raise your child as part of a specific religion. He says, how can you assign him to be a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim or whatever? He didn't choose that. You're kind of forcing him into a certain way of life, and that's unethical, according to Richard Dawkins. So right, Jonathan Sacks responded very fascinatingly. Do you speak English to your child? Right? He said, yeah. So aren't you essentially forcing him into a specific language? You should just not speak anything to him and let him choose. Do you want to be French? Do you want to be Chinese? Do you want to be English? Like, it's all open. It's an open world. So Richard Dawkins said, no, it's different. Okay, whatever. You can argue back and forth, but... But I think the deeper point Rav Jonathan Sacks is pointing out is that we're all born into systems. Whether we're all born into kind of religions and ways of thinking. And then, yeah, you have the freedom to embrace it or not embrace it. But like, to just say it's all open, it actually doesn't lead towards human happiness. And that's, for example, why, you know, when you're a father, you teach your kid to go to shul and then to daven, to say the words of davening. Does he understand the meaning of the words? No. Does he understand why he's to go to shul? No. But he gets into the habit of davening, let's say, for example, of keeping Shabbos. And then hopefully later, now that it's already natural for him, he can, you know, he can speak Hebrew. He can then go deeper into understanding the depth of his traditions. But you do, you know, according to our Judaism, you don't start off blank slate. Okay? We do start with commitment. Okay? So I think it's really the fundamental core of our religion. All religion, in fact. And I also think that there's a level of commitment that us moderns aren't used to. So for example, neder. There's a whole mesechet called Mesechet Nedarim. It's all about different vows we make. And Yom Kippur starts off about nullifying these vows. In fact, if you read the Torah itself, the Torah talks about the concept of vows, promises, 19 times. 19 times the Torah goes into if a person means a vow to this and that. In other words, the Torah is kind of obsessed with the concept of commitment. You have to do this, and if you sin, you bring a korban. It's a great sin. Okay? In fact, I have a friend who wanted so much to understand the concept of vows that he actually made a vow. But we don't do it so much nowadays. But he wanted to feel what it means to be committed. Like a silly vow, but he made a vow. And that's something that our generation is scared of, but it's like a whole different thing when you actually make a promise. And in fact, the Torah wants us to, according to Halacha, the word of a Jew has, on a certain level, is a vow. For example, if you tell your friend, hey, I'll pick you up from the airport, and he has no reason to believe that you're not going to pick you up at the airport, halachically, you're obligated to pick him up at the airport. You didn't say I vow, you didn't even say I promise. But the word of a Jew is powerful, and it's like a vow. It's a commitment. So you have to do it. All right? So
what happens if you don't?
When you get up to the next world, you'll find out.
But it's considered a sin. It's considered a big sin. Okay? There is a lot of details, like under certain situations when you could have assumed you weren't serious about it, maybe it doesn't have the same extent.
But the point I'm making is that commitment is built into the system, and that the assumption is the word of a Jew is a commitment. Okay? Now, that's a little bit about commitment from a Torah perspective. Let's talk about it now from the psychological advantages of commitment. Okay, what happens? I think there's two main advantages in our brain psychologically when a person makes a commitment. Okay? The first is expressed very, very beautifully by a Scottish mountaineer. I mean, he climbed mountains. I don't know anything else about him. I think he was a writer also. But he has a really, really powerful quote. And it's in the first source sheet. You guys still holding by it? No, not in today's sheet, in last week's sheet. So if you don't have it, don't worry about it. I'll just read it for you. He says like this. W.H. Murray. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. The moment one definitely commits oneself, providence moves too. In other words, God moves also. All sorts of things occur to help one that would not otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issue from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance which no man would have dreamed of would have come his way. In other words, he's speaking here kind of metaphysically, not only psychologically. Until you're committed to something, always obstacles come up. Oh, there are always problems. As soon as you make that commitment, the obstacles kind of clear away, or maybe in your head they clear away because they're not as important, and you can achieve your goals. But as long as you're just kind of testing the waters and trying things out and seeing, you're not, in many matters in life, you're not going to be able to succeed. You're always going to be like, one foot in, one foot out, I don't know. And on a spiritual level, there's going to be clogs and blocks. But as soon as you're committed, things clear out. Indeed. I assume he's, I don't know if he's a Christian or I don't know what his belief system is, but he is speaking about Hashkocha, about providence, about divine providence. Yeah. You want to say something, Daniel?
I don't know if it's true.
You can challenge, you can say whatever you want, it's fine.
It sounds a bit like marriage.
Exactly. Exactly.
But there, it's not that you can make it to yourself, although it could be, because somebody else involved. Like, if you commit to do something together, like, if one person doesn't want to do that thing that you commit together, like, how does the other one person, like, that seems a little bit complicated to me.
And completely. And in fact, I think that's probably one of the biggest problems with modern-day marriage is that as long as one side is not committed, completely, really committed, okay, that's an interesting question, but a lot of times, you know, if one side is only half committed and thinks it was kind of like, yeah, I'll try out marriage, see if it works, and if it doesn't, whatever, then, like, it doesn't really work. The whole thing doesn't click into place unless both sides are, like, in it together and committed to it.
Marriage also is a thing in itself. Someone who isn't married, what is that kind of relationship? Every day you're working for the relationship, and when you're not, then you're seeing it deteriorate. But if someone is married, now you're stuck in it, whether you like it or not, and it's not necessarily have to work. Because you commit it to me, you have to.
No, the hefech, I'd argue the opposite. I'd say, if you're not really committed, okay, if it works, it works. And if not, whatever. If it's too hard, like she's being annoying or he's being, whatever, so I give up. But if I'm committed, and no matter what, we are in this together, then I'm going to work really, really hard to invest in her, in me, in the relationship, because I'm committed. I'm building a house together. I'm not just trying it out. But as long as it's just a girlfriend-boyfriend situation, there's no real commitment here. If it works, well, not when things start going sour. There are other challenges in marriage, for sure. That you don't have in, but I actually think that's one of the most beautiful things about a real marriage, when both sides are really committed to making it work no matter what, and making it good.
That's why it's very important to clarify what you're committed to before making a commitment to achieve something together.
Certainly it's important to try your best to understand what you're committing yourself to. But at the same time, I would argue that you can't really ever know.
Yeah.
Because how can you know? You're 25 years old. You think you know what she's going to be like in 45 years from now? Right? You don't know.
2 years,
right. You don't know yourself. So, and that's the beauty, though. But you know, and yes, we are, you know, but like, that's the beauty, because as soon as both sides are committed, no matter what, right, it doesn't matter. Because I'm committed. I'm going to make it work. But as long as even one side is like, it'll work as long as, then that's not a real marriage. You understand? And that's why, this is a whole different shir, but that's why the essence of love, ava, is loyalty, commitment. And from the Torah's perspective, and ava actually means commitment to the law, not just love in a ooey-gooey sense. But we're getting a little off topic. We're just doing it. Exactly. You're chill. Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna get this soon, but Rav Shimshon Pinchas, in his book about Shabbos Kodesh, is a beautiful example. There's a picture of him on the if you have the old source sheet somewhere, you know, last page. Anyways, he's on the next source sheet, actually, you have him. So he talks about...
Cool. Can I just check what you said? You said...
Yeah.
I have loyalty and commitment, but that commitment is commitment to the law.
to A law, to Jewish law, like, you know, would be to Jewish law.
To Jewish law and to each other. Love is commitment. Love is not an emotion. Love means commitment. That's why if you look every time in Sefer Dvarim, it says, and you should love God, it always says, and keep these laws, and keep these laws. It doesn't say, and then hug him and love him, and you know, daven Karlach. It says, and be committed to the laws. That's what love means in a biblical sense. You see this all in ancient Near Eastern literature. The kings and vassals are saying, I love you, I love you. They don't mean they love you. It means I'm loyal to you. Yeah. I'm loyal to your law. It's a... Yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. Giving. I definitely think they're related concepts. Nachon, I'm committed, but so I give. You know, and that's the essence of marriage. Also, okay, not working through receiving, I'll start loving through giving. You know? It's a different thing. Let's say if I'm going to play tennis and my goal is to have the most exciting, you know, challenging game of the world, like, I'm not going to enjoy it. But if my goal is to give to my wife, whatever, to help her, then I'm enjoying it, right? Because it's a different goal. So if I'm committed... Nachon, great point. Rav Dessler. Exactly. And that's the essence of marriage also, is to be always giving. Commit to giving, no matter what. Tell you, good tangents. Okay. Anyways, I'm gonna go back to one of my favorite army stories. I had a good friend. He's still a friend, but his name is Ezri, and Ezri is one of the most amazing people I ever met in the army. But he was a little overweight. I remember the first hike, I was pushing him because I'm pretty fit, and he was a little overweight. It was like a nothing hike. It was like 2 kilometers, and I was like pushing him. He's overweight. He was determined, very determined. He lost like 20 pounds. He ate almost nothing in the army, just like water and fruits. And by the time it's something called a Bochen Maslu, where you have to jump over a certain fence. And once you did that, you go to Kav, you go to Hebron, where we were serving. So even though he had, you know, lost a lot of pounds, he's still a little overweight. So we were all kind of like, you know, we passed it the first or second or third time. And some people cheated. Truth is, and the army kind of looked the other way. He was a very determined person. He must have tried for a month, every day, just running and running and jumping and running and jumping. He refused to cheat. We were all already in Hebron, and we were just like rooting for him. He's just in the beats. He'd wake up, daven, go to breakfast, train. Until one day, he did it. He got over the fence. And he was the one of all of us who stayed the longest in the army. He was there for at least 4 years as a commander. And amazing guy. But I remember he threw his knapsack over the fence, so to speak. Right? And I got that phrase from Tal Shachar. In fact, I got this whole shiur from Tal Shachar's shiur, book, Happier, which I read about 3 years back. Happier. I can lend it to you if you want. I'd be happy to lend all these books to you guys. Tal Shachar is amazing YouTube videos. I mentioned him last year. Is the best, the most popular happiness course in Harvard history. He's an Israeli Jew, and he says this concept a lot about just commit, whether it makes sense or not. Make the commitment, and you'll get there eventually. That's what Ezri did. Truth is, this is my sheer philosophy. Every week, I commit to a different sheer. I haven't yet prepared that cheer most of the time. I don't know when I'm going to find the time to give that cheer, but if I say Wednesday night at 6 p.m. we're doing a cheer, it usually happens. This whole Simcha seminar is exactly that. I committed over this whole Corona thing. I was schmoozing with Chabad Zelot. I want to do it. I'm going to commit to it. I'm going to prepare the class. I want 8 people. I want this type of format, and I just committed to doing it. I made the story sheets, and then, like, here we are. Pretty close. Just sadly. She's hopefully coming. She's resting. Yitzchak hopefully will come. She comes today. Anyways, that's my life philosophy a lot of the time. You just make the commitment to get there, and then you get there. Of course, you got to make a realistic goal, as we'll talk about, but sometimes don't be so, you know, don't have it all planned out, as we talked about today, and just make the commitment. No, so you're right. On a practical level, our rabbis teach us don't make a swear. Because they also know realistically, if you actually swear to do something and you violate it, it's a great sin. So we don't swear nowadays. But you can make a commitment and say, Bli neder, or I'm going to try my best. The truth is, it's a scared tactic. You know, it would be better to actually commit. But we know ourselves. We know the weakness of our generation. But at least what I say is, I'm going to try, I commit to try my best. That I can say. Will I succeed? I don't know, but I can commit to try my best. Yeah.
I had this today, like this. So I checked that out and there was nothing I could do there. Then I had a dentist appointment at 12:30. But the person I was with wanted to get to somewhere else. More at 12, at a similar time, and like I decided like I was gonna help to get them there. And then on my way I'm realizing like I've got a short time to get the appointment. So I phoned him, I said, listen, is there any free parking close by? Took my car's not license. And they said no. I said, I might be a little bit late. They said, we've only got a certain amount of time allocated to each patient. So I parked my car in the first parking spot there on the Beit Lechem, and I rode my bicycle up, and I was there in time, and I was actually waiting for them.
And yeah.
Then again, coming here, like there was a shiur I was on at 5 o'clock that was going, but I still got here.
You make the commitment, everything, Providence makes it happen. I think we've all probably experienced this in our lives, and try it this week. Try to make commitments to things and see how things, you know, change, shift. Sometimes it's even like I'll make a commitment in my head before I go to bed. I'm waking up for Nate's. I don't have an alarm clock. It doesn't matter. My brain knows to wake up. When I'm like, I think I'll go to Nate's, it doesn't always happen. When I'm going to Nate's, I wake up, no matter what time. There's something about that act of commitment. There's a beautiful example of this with Thomas Edison. Okay? So Thomas Edison, maybe the greatest inventor ever. Okay. Arguable. Whatever. He's up there. Okay, top five. I did my 7th grade report on him, so I like it. He invented the phonograph. A lot of people don't know that. Music. Anyway. So, Thomas Edison was working on the light bulb. And he was getting closer, but thus far, every single commitment, every single time, and it was like hundreds of times, he had failed in actually getting the light bulb to go. Until he and his workers made a commitment. On January 1st, we will have light. And on December 31st, there's a picture of him, the light bulb at that first time, there was light. And the last day, they figured out how to get the light bulb working, and that there was light that year. That's a beautiful example of you make the commitment, things change, an energy shift. Or maybe one of the most famous quotes in the Gemara in Yuma, the one who comes to purify themselves, misayinlo, Hashem helps him. You got to make the effort. You got to make the commitment. I want help, Hashem. How it's going to happen, Hashem will help you. But I need to make the commitment to want to make it happen, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will move providence, as William Murray said, to make things shift, to make things happen.
The way the man
wants to go, exactly. Another example from Bilam, actually, Rocky Front, but the way the man, very good. Same idea. Person just directs his heart towards a particular path, and then God helps you go there. You need to, like, direct your heart there.
I can see what this is doing in Israel now. Sunday, 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 Sunday they started with the quarantine.
Wow.
So I got in just before the stuff, and my visa
expired in May because I was on a student visa from London. I took it back on the 5th of June. But they automatically extended all the visas from the 30th of June. So I bypassed that problem without having to deal with it.
I've seen it in a million. I saw it at my wedding. I was like, we're getting married. We don't care. Corona, not Corona, we're getting married. How? I don't know. We'll figure it out. We're getting there. And then we figured out a way. It's like that, you know? It's like that in life a lot of times. All right. So, good. So that was a lot about commitment. A little bit more. Some of this we covered already. A little bit more about accountability. Okay, we already mentioned how accountability, which is related to commitment, is the glue that ties commitment to result. If you have the commitment, you want the result, you need something or someone to hold you accountable for your commitment. Yeah. Right? It's very important, like we've been talking more about. And in Chabad, they have a custom called the Hachlata. This is something I love that I try to steal from Chabad at all of my shiurim.
Taking on something.
At the end of, okay, you had 5 l'chaims, you sang a great song. Very nice. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to attach that high to something practical in your life? Make a chlota. Right? And that's actually, I think, Chabadnikim like the concept of January 1st commitment, a New Year's resolution. Because you're making a commitment to do something. I'll try. Make a commitment, make a chlota. Right? And, a means a commitment to do an action, a specific commitment. Like, I am going to wake up tomorrow morning for shach, whatever. Chalata is the commitment, and the accountability is, as we mentioned before, the aser lecha rav, or the kneel lecha chaver, or the friend to hold you accountable. And Rav Chaim Chaim Kalman in Eish Kodesh writes that he wrote B'nei Machshava Tovot. He said that there should be little groups holding each other accountable for their commitments. And similarly in the Muslim movement, Rav Salanter set up little groups that should meet together and hold each other accountable for their growth.
I'm seeing this now with a friend because we're talking about wanting something. Wanting to see something, wanting to do something. But there's work involved in doing it. And that part is not so well in place with something.
Very good. So that's, you're skipping one step. We're going to get there in just 2 minutes.
Okay.
2 minutes we're getting there. Okay. Three more statistics. So that I told you at the beginning of the course, we're going to try to connect Torah to stats, to science. So I did a lot of research about working out, workout buddies. I think most of us know intuitively, or maybe we've tried it. When you have a workout buddy, things succeed much better than when you just try to go it alone. Mm-hmm. I saw one study, it said you have a 76% chance at succeeding in a workout program if you're just doing it alone, and if you do it with a friend, 95%. Okay, and another stat I saw, it was the...
76%
it was probably a pretty easy workout thing in that particular case. It probably depends on the nature of the workout program. And how much you paid in. Okay, and another one, in Kansas State, it said there's a 200% better chance of succeeding if you have a workout buddy than if you just do it alone. Because it just makes sense. Yeah, we've all been there. It's that rainy day. Do you really want to go running? But then your buddy comes and shows up, and then you succeed. If you're both committed to doing it, you can succeed.
It's also like having somebody or a lift team to work. A lift team to work, like... If you take one week and then I take the next week, like, I'm showing up at your door.
Right. Another amazing example of this is Chavruta. O Chavruta, O Mituta. I'll tell you guys an awesome story, one of my favorite stories. So, Rav Jonathan Sacks was showing, it was maybe Rabbi Norman Lamb, someone was showing, who just died, Aleva Shalom. By the way, I forgot to mention, but this whole Torah should be the sacred foolish flame of the whole world and the shalom bias of everyone, the whole world over Bezrat Hashem. So, he's taking these Catholic the head of the Catholic priest church came to Yeshiva University. I remember when I was there, I went to MTA. It was a big deal. And he walks into the base medrash of Yeshiva University. Has anybody ever been there? Yeah. You know, he's been there. It's packed. It's loud. It's very impressive. At all hours of the day, there's hundreds of people screaming loudly about the Gemara. Okay? And this, sometimes thousands. Yeah, different base medrash, but yeah, there's all over the time. But,
like the mirror.
Like the mirror, yeah. Like the mirror. So, so this Catholic, the head of the Pope, or what, something like that, walks in there and he's in shock. He says, how do you do this? In his huge, beautiful library, they've got like, you know, 30, 40 priests quietly, you know, reading to themselves. He's got thousands of, he's like, are these the rabbis? He's like, no, they're just, you know, college kids. The 18-year-olds studying ancient texts from 2,000 years ago. And he's like, what? How did you do this? How do you convince people to do this? Like, what's going on? And why are they screaming at each other? That's a whole different thing. So Rabbi Lam had a brilliant idea, and he said, I think it's chavruta. That's the brilliance of Judaism, because it's not a rabbi giving a lecture. That's cute. It's nice. But how involved are you when one person's talking and the other person's kind of passively listening? It's kind of boring after a while. But when you've got a chavruta and you've got to show up for that chavruta, because if you don't show up, he's going to be disappointed, you got to show up. And then you show up and it's enjoyable because you're 50%. You got to really understand the Gemara, or else he's relying upon you. And that's the key to why Jewish learning has been successful throughout all of history, because of the concept of chavruta, which is basically accountability and commitment. Again, only if it's a really committed chavruta. If you show up when you show up, then it doesn't really work as well. But as long as I have a committed chavruta, it really works. And you can play with this. You can do it over WhatsApp chavruta. I have an email chavruta with my brother. We know that we're going to email each other by the end of the day of the Amud of Gemara that we learn. We don't learn it together, but we know that we're going to be committing to each other. And I've succeeded in learning some mesechet through this system of commitment and accountability. Okay, so I think Judaism has built in within it a lot of accountability and commitment. And now the world is waking up to realize the importance of commitment and accountability and how effective and important it is psychologically. Yeah, you want to say something?
I see like how frustrated I get when I feel like someone is like missing my time.
Because he's not really committed, right?
They committed to something else, different than, I suppose, marriage and relationships, like that. She's committed to doing something, you committed to doing something else, the timings don't exactly work out. Now which
commitment takes precedence? Well, the answer is, in a married commitment, almost always marriage, your wife, your husband, that should take precedence. But in a good relationship, you work it out, you communicate beforehand to make sure there's as little conflicts as possible.
There's also like what actually holds more value for each person, because if you're only working on the things together, like how you grow yourself, so that also helps to build it together.
For sure. You need to be committed to yourself, you need to be committed to her and him, and you need to find a way to make them work together.
So like now I was hanging out with Mary and she started walking off, and I was still hanging out waiting for the other person. And that one wanted to get to Jericho Hebron, but I wasn't going that way.
This is the nature
and
of life.
Got to sit because I wasn't
going that way. And you, okay, this is the whole nature of all of life. So committed people, I'm committed to this, but they want me to commit to that, and what am I really committed to? So the conflicting commitments, you have to kind of ask yourself, what am I really committed to? Okay. One amazing stat. If you get nothing else, remember this stat, and then I'm going to teach you a cool trick that I invented. One of my only chidushim for this year. Okay, don't look at the stat. Don't look at this. I want to ask you, it's fun to play the game. The American Society of Training and Development did a study to figure out what percentage of the time do our goals get achieved, and what things can help our goals get achieved. Obviously, there are different types of goals. But in general, what are our odds? Okay, so let's play the game. Here, let's have fun. A random goal pops into your head. Okay? What is the odds for most people, percentage-wise, what percent that that goal will be achieved? What do you guys think? Sure, throw out numbers.
5%.
10%. Okay, the answer is 10%. Very good. Bing.
It depends how quickly you get to it as well.
Nachon, there's different types of goals. There's different types of that. Fine. But a goal pops in, about 1 out of 10 of those random things that pop into our head will actually ever end up happening. The other 9 will be lost in the wind.
How do you define goal and like a desire, want? For example, I want to eat the roasted chicken. Then I go to a restaurant and I buy it. Then my desire is met.
Sorry. Right.
Or my goal is to achieve.
Right, so that would be the 1 in 10. Right? Nachon? I think in this study, it's just like any random thought that comes into your head of something you want to do.
Like, I want to get a PhD, maybe a
more. Right. And truth is, I don't know exactly how the study was done, but this is, it's more for the lesson we had out of it. Okay,
so, yeah,
that's the point. Okay, next. You consciously decide, not just in your head, you have to come too close. Welcome. Take a watermelon first. You decide, it's not just a thought that comes your head. You decide, I am going to achieve this goal. You don't have to verbalize it, but you decide. Now what are the odds that you're going to achieve your goal?
25%.
Very good, 25. Okay, excellent. You're on your game. Pretty good. Okay. You decide when you will do this. You have a plan as to when specifically, like we talked about last year, I'm going to achieve my goal.
75%.
40%. Okay. You decide how you will do it. You have a specific way of doing it. Not when, but how. 50%. Okay, this is one study. You commit to someone. You have an accountability partner. You actually say, yeah, I'm going to do this. 65%. Did you study this before? I'm pretty good. 65%. Now watch this. You have a specific accountability coach. In other words, someone who will be holding you accountable. And he's not just randomly you committed once. He's going to be every day WhatsApping you and saying, did you do it or did you not do it? And there's a specific plan. Is that 95%? And this is so crucial. Because so many people think, this Yom Kippur, I want to be a better person. And then they get so frustrated, I can't believe, why bother making goals because I failed in all my goals? And the answer is yes, but did you make a commitment? Did you get an accountability partner? Obviously, there's an 85% difference here. You got to do the actions that work. Okay, if you just have it in the air somewhere, it's not going to work 90% of the time. But if you make a commitment to someone, 95% of the time, you will succeed. Of course, it depends on the nature of the goal you're working on. But that, isn't that an amazing stat? It's amazing for marriage, right? If you want to achieve a better marriage, it's an amazing for everything. Okay, so if you get nothing out of this year, remember that stat.
And it's not the stat I want to remember.
It's not the stat you want. Okay, so you really
did.
I would say pointless, but it's 90% of the time it won't work.
If you want to make real goals, you have to set up this plan.
You have to set the plan, exactly. And that's what most people don't realize. So you guys, tell them. You got to let the people know that you need a plan and you need a commitment. That's the way our brains work. It's not because you're a bad person. It's just because that's how Hashem created our brains. We need commitment, we need accountability in order to succeed in our goals in life. Okay? And this leads me... Yes, Daniel?
It's not just letting somebody do it. You have a specific accountability appointment.
Right. A life coach, as we call it.
Or a
rabbi.
Together.
What?
It seems like something together.
You're committed. You're committed. He's got a job. He's meeting with you. That's why it works even better if you pay him. Because you're both really committed. He has to because you're getting paid, and you want to because you bothered paying him. Right? right? That's why coaching works so amazingly, so effectively, because you're committed and there's a plan and he's holding you accountable. The truth is, you don't need that's why I'm a life coach. I'm not a psychologist. You don't need to go deep into your psyche. And look, some people do. Don't get me wrong. Some people do. They're really complicated. But a lot of times what we're discovering is you don't need to figure out the deeper Freudian problems of what you're struggling with. You just need someone to keep pushing, keep going, tweak it a little bit this, tweak it a little bit that, a little bit more that way, and then you're there, and then you can drive, and then you can ride your bicycle, and then you can play.
There's an idea of, like, affirmation. It's like, there's the people who are looking across, so then they're living in that sense of report. Then if people are looking to the future, like, that's where I want to be. But there's also another idea of, like, success blockers. That would be
holding you back.
Beliefs and values that are, like, I think all rich people are snobbish.
So now you're going deeper. You're going psychological. You're saying, what are your inner core beliefs which are holding you back from achieving your goals? And there are life coaches who go there, and it's true. Sometimes you really do need that, you know? And it's fun to kind of go deeper, figure out why, what's holding you back, what triggers you so much when she does that, right? But we're going simple right now. We're going simple and saying, a lot of time you just need someone to hold you accountable. Nachon, and it's a therapist, but it could be your friend, right? And it doesn't have to be super duper deep all the time. Sometimes base level, you just need the reinforcement, right?
Sliding along. Would you say it's more effective about having someone to keep you accountable if it's like a rabbi or somebody that you fear?
I think that the more you'll feel disappointed in letting him down, the more effective it is. Of course, it depends on the nature of the person, but like I mentioned last week, let's say you want to commit smoking. The best way to win, I just talked to someone who's trying to commit smoking about this, is commit to someone who you'll really feel bad letting down, right? Don't commit to someone who's going to let you off free. Right? That's kind of... Actually, I find this sometimes. My life coach, he's too nice. He doesn't, like, you know, give me a hard time. He checks in once every other day. I can get away with a kind of weak answer. And, like, he'll make excuses. I don't feel like he's going to be on my back enough. Now, you got to find the balance. If he's too harsh, or if they're too harsh, you know, it won't be worth it. I'll lose more than I gain. Maybe I'll get to the goal, but I'll be angry and resentful going there. Or maybe I'll quit. You know, you got to find the right balance. But definitely committing to someone who you respect, who's going to be on your back, who's committed, who cares. I think that's even more important. You care about him and they care about you. You know, if you don't get the feeling like they really care, they're too busy, and it doesn't work as well. Okay? And you have to have respect for them and Yeah, of course. But for sure. And that's a little bit the flaw with this program, is that I'm not mean enough. And that I let you guys get away, when you give me a lame answer for why you didn't do your habit, or you text me the next day, and we forgot about one little day. I'm too nice. Sorry. If you guys want, this is what I've done with my coach. I tell him, please be meaner. You're too nice. If you guys see that I'm letting you get away with murder, just tell me. I'll be harsh. I'll get really angry.
Isn't that like your thing earlier where you said, is this a goal you really want to achieve?
Nachon.
Could be that.
Exactly. And that's me being a little intense, a little bit upfront. Yeah? Okay. Do me a favor, take this far and hand him over here. Very good. Okay, I made up a mnemonic, or a way of remembering this. It doesn't make sense, it's just my shtick. So you can write it down if you want. I like this. It's called the RCPA model. Okay? Why? I don't know, I like that name. Here's the RCPA model of success in achieving your goals. Nothing. It just... You could have made a DCPA, but for some reason it's RCPA, RCPA. Okay, the first thing you need in order to achieve your goals in life is Ratzon. You could say DCPA, desire, but I like RSCPA. I don't know why. Okay? You need the why. You need to want it. You need to burn within yourself why I am doing this. If, let's say, you have a goal to run every morning, you need to ask yourself, why am I running every morning? And you need to really believe in the why. And the deeper it's burned within you, the why, the motivation, better the chance you have that the commitment will last. Okay? Now, I want to say something important about that. It runs out. Okay? You may feel super strongly about something today, and then in a week from now, you're not feeling super strong about it. Okay? That's, by the way, why I send those annoying WhatsApp videos. You don't have to watch them, but the goal is to keep inspiring yourself with whatever goal we're talking about each week, because, oh, I need, and I personally need to rewatch them and re-see the shears and re-see how important, even though intellectually I know it, but I need to really feel that. So, for example, I find every year I need to watch a video about why sugar is bad for you, why external sugar. I know it. I already committed, but I need to rewatch that video. Same thing with vegetarianism. I need to every year watch a few videos or give a share about why I think they mistreat animals, or else I lose my passion. And it's Torah. Chofetz Chaim says every day we need to learn Musar. Every single day. It doesn't matter if you learned yesterday, but every single day you need to reinvigorate yourself with that ratzon, with that desire, in order to succeed. So the first step is R of ratzon, finding a way to give yourself the passion. Yeah. Fine. So then be aware of which, you know, which situations bring different ratzonot out of you, like all humans.
Food was painful and I was going to weight, so I started putting on weight. I felt like I'm comfortable in my pants, so I'm putting into my day anymore. But even though the food went away, I don't care, it's not my problem. I'll eat what I want, so eat anyway, so I stopped overeating. That was one
thing. Fine.
Then I was eating the meat, I wasn't buying it, but if it was sweet, no problem.
Yeah.
Now I'm eating raw food. But even cutting out a lot of gluten and sugar and other things. But I like honey. I like honey. I like sweetness. So that's where I am now. But I have seen anything goes, vegetables.
And your environment affects you, right? And we really should do a whole shiur just about putting yourself in the right environment. I actually have that shiur, so I wish we had more time. I love that shiur. But the point is, you're right. Our environment affects us. We have to recognize, we have to choose what type of life do I want to live with. And that will actually stir from the pildot comes the ratzon. Yitzchak, come closer. Come sit here. Yala, be with us. When you're in that situation, it will stir. So the real question we have to ask is, what environment do I want to put myself in? And by the way, environment is what video I'm listening to, what YouTube video, what shiur, that's going inside my brain. What book I'm reading, that's also my environment, because that's what's going inside my brain. So, right, so if I'm filling my life with chassidus, that's my desire. If I'm filling myself with Bible criticism, that's what I'm going to start desiring. I know, because I've been in both, you know, both worlds. I studied Bible academically, I'm telling you, you start being in this environment, it starts affecting you. Your environment will affect you. It's a great point, but not really the point of our shiur, but you're right. 100% that affects our ratzon. Good. Want to move on? There's so much to cover. The next is the commitment. You gotta make a commitment. It's not good enough to say, I need to actually tell myself, I am going to commit myself to this. That's why I've been so annoying about saying, are you committed to the Simcha seminar? Not maybe, I don't know. You know, I had to even kick some people out. Not in a bad way, but like, they just couldn't commit. And I was like, that's fine. But just, that's for the other shiur. Come to the Thursday night. That's a non-commitment. This is commitment. You got either you're in or you're out. Okay, and that's what we've been talking about now. Good. Next is, it doesn't have to be in this order, but plan. That's the when, the what, the how, the if, the then. What is your plan? Okay, very nice. You're committed to doing it, but when are you going to do it? How are you going to do it? And what are you going to do when those roadblocks happen? And that's why we've had these weeks. And like, you know, you started, you know, and it was working well the first 3 days to wake up at 7 in the morning. And then it didn't work. So why not? What held you back? How do we readjust? How do we, you know, GPS? What's go right, go left? Yeah. Can I say something? Okay. And then finally, A, accountability. That's the missing step that so many people forget. Commit yourself. Be accountable to someone. It could be your friend. It could be your wife. It could be Hashem. Okay? And that's why religion is so effective, because we know it. Someone's holding us accountable. Only problem is he's invisible and he kind of lets us get away with murder sometimes, and he doesn't kill us every time we sin.
That's not why you should get married, but I can do it when I need it.
Oh, okay. Some of it always comes back to marriage if you're doing it. Come on.
When you need it. Oh, yeah. You just get out of jail too far, but you're not in jail.
I hear. So that is my model. Take it or leave it. RCPA, Ratzon, commitment, plan, make an action plan, and accountability. If you do that, 95%, you will succeed in life, in anything. Sounds good? Okay, that's part one.